This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Give me something that that knocked your socks off right away. There was a line that he said probably just about, about 10 minutes ago. He said, trading up for a veteran. I thought that was interesting when he said that because I was like, huh. I didn't expect him to say that.
Well, they've done that in the past where they've used those draft picks to bring in miscellaneous veterans. And we were talking about it a little bit off, but like, Amari Cooper wasn't on draft day per se, but that was a draft pick that they used. Jerry Jeudy, same exact idea. Again, not on draft day, but some of these guys who didn't totally fit in their previous spot, but the Browns saw something that they could bring in and help along the way. And exploit is the wrong word to do it, but so, accentuate
but
is probably the
right
word.
When he said that, immediately went to my mind on Kirk Cousins. That's why, And like I feel like they're going into this where they want to be with the situation they have at quarterback right now, especially after picking up Flacco last week. So I feel like they're calm with what they want to do going into this thing, and they're just going to draft another quarterback, and that's said and done. Like I kind of feel like the Cousins deal is not going to happen at this point. But then he kind of was like, yeah, well, we could trade up for a veteran.
Daryl and I had D. Orlando Ledbetter on from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he was outstanding. It was great to talk to him. But we brought up the Kirk Cousins thing to him, and he goes, we've sat down to try to figure this trade out. We can't figure it out. We can't figure out how to make this work in a way that's functional for both teams to operate under the cap. So the minute he said that, I was like, okay, Cousins is off the board. And then Flacco just further hammered that home, where it's like, okay, Cousins is completely off the board. We can ditch that idea. And so I didn't...
Until they could figure out a way to do it after the draft. Like, and I don't even know if it's got to happen during the draft or after the... If it happens during the draft, it's something that they have definitely talked about. And if I were the Browns, that Atlanta would have come way back on what they want for Kirk Cousins to try to pull that off.
The problem is the dead cap hits and all that kind of stuff. All the nerd stuff that people don't usually pay attention to, that's what's holding this up. That's the reason why they can't do it. The minute that $10 million bonus hit, what was that, the first week of free agency? That $10 million bonus hit for Cousins, it basically nicks the trade. Like, there's no way that the Browns can do it with the cap hits that would take place, and the Falcons can do it with the cap hits that would take place that makes sense for both sides. Like, that basically ripped that whole thing in half and threw it out. Or so D. Orlando Ledbetter explained to us.
Okay.
So, I kind of thought, and especially the Flacco part, threw that out the window. Now, the Jerry Jeudy trade is the interesting one. the Troy Hill trade that he brought up, I forgot that they brought in Troy Hill around draft day. The former cornerback who I think went to high school in this area too.
But there's a difference between around draft day and draft day. You know what that's what I'm saying. Like, is there a veteran out there that somebody wants to trade for one of our picks? Is that what that's yeah. where he was when he was talking about that around 10:35? I was like, huh, I wonder if there's a veteran they want that. And then does that not necessarily play with the number two pick, but does that play with the pick that's a little bit later in the draft?
I think the pick that's a little later. I mean, they've got how many third rounders they have? I think they got two or three.
Five, what are they, five in the top 104?
Yeah. So I think that's where those third rounders come in, because those third rounders have always been the ones that they've used to bring in those vets. I mean, the Elijah Moore one is the different one, where that was a second rounder and they got Elijah Moore at a third. So they essentially moved down a round to get Elijah Moore. They're not afraid to look at these rosters and say, this guy isn't being used right, we can use him right. I think that has been one of the most fascinating things with this team, is the way that they have looked at other guys on other rosters and have said,
well, that's Kenny Pickett,
we need to use
right?
this
Isn't
guy.
That Kenny Pickett? Well,
and
isn't that's why
that's what
when I hear Mary Kay talk about having confidence in him, thinking that he could be the starting quarterback to begin the season, that's where that comes from, that they think that other teams made mistakes or that they put guys. And by the way, I don't disagree with the Browns. I think, excuse me. Sorry, there are other teams that do make mistakes all the time because, and like Joe Flacco said on the morning show, they try to throw these guys out too early.
Right.
And that they're not ready, they're not prepared, and now you're trying to make someone go from high school diploma to doctorate in, you know, 3 weeks. It doesn't work that way.
Agreed.
I thought and I know we'll play it a little bit later, but I thought Joe was dead on right that we try to force these quarterbacks out of college way too quick onto the field in the NFL because we want the instant return. Because, and I'm not saying that's the case here, but I've heard it before with other owners that they're like, well, we drafted this guy number one overall. We drafted him in the top five. Why am I not watching him on the field? I've heard that, and I'm not saying that's the Haslam saying that. I'm saying I've heard that other times before.
Well, but that will come from ownership too. Like, and that's not just a Haslam thing. That's an ownership thing around the league.
Right.
Is the biggest fan of these teams is the owner.
Why am I paying this guy?
Exactly.
That's the whole thing.
That's the thing. The biggest fan of these teams is, I mean, goodness, how many Browns Therapy Mondays have you done where we've got 12 full phone lines of people going, bring in the backup? Like the most popular,
every week for 13 years.
Right. The most popular quarterbacks in Cleveland at any given time are Bernie Kosar, the backup quarterback, and the Ohio State quarterback.
True.
Like, that's the way that this always goes. And you don't even, outside of Bernie, everybody else falls under those buckets. The thing I thought was so fascinating was the fact that he did say in that press conference, Andrew Berry, that is, that there's more physical ability in Kenny Pickett than what he's shown. That they think that. I thought that was really interesting.
That, well, to me, that sounds like they feel like he's had bad coaching between Pittsburgh
right.
and
we've
North
all
Carolina.
Trashed Matt Canada until the end of time. Now, I'm not going to trash Philly because they, you know, think they've done a really nice job, but I wonder if they've, you know, Sirianni and that whole group has catered that offense, and Kellen Moore and everybody else who's walked through that door has catered that offense so much to Jalen Hurts that maybe Barry is saying, if we cater an offense to Kenny Pickett that doesn't look like the Matt Canada pop gun offense that we saw, maybe there's something here that we can work with. The biggest thing that came out of this, man, there are no signs of desperation out of that dude.
No, he did not sound like he's
there
desperate.
No signs
and
of desperation.
Also that they feel like they're not going to be pressured to pick somebody at any point during the draft just because they feel like there's pressure to take somebody. That's just not there.
Right.
He did sound pretty cool for a guy that's a week away from the draft.
Sounded.
But then again, that's his job, isn't it? And he's always been that way. I mean, Andrew always sounds confident in what he's saying and respectful to come back to the guy. Well, you know, like a line like, you know, Joe just fits the system. We have excitement. You know, somebody had asked him that same question. You know, but then he backs it up with statements like, not all positions are created equal. So there are some things he said that you're like, okay, I get it. I understand it. Other things, he's not going to give you the information.
Oh, gosh.
No. And also, I mean, right out of the gate, he's just like, well, you know, you can't assume that Cam Ward's going to be number one. Although we have game plans to tell us that he's number one, but, you know, we've got to be prepared that what if he doesn't go number one? What if somebody trades up that they want to jump ahead of the Browns because they think they know they want Travis Hunter and they want to go ahead of the Browns, and maybe somebody thinks the Browns aren't going to take Cam Ward if he was sitting there at number two? I mean, there are all these weird things that we get into that it's more psychological than anything. And you know when you realize it? After you look at the draft board after day one, you're like, ah, we really overthought that.
Right.
Every year I do that. Every year, that we really overthought that. Or Or the opposite is, oh, man, these guys have to believe they're the smartest ones in the room. That's why they did this. That's why they traded out. That's why they did this. They did that. And you're like, oh, they have to be, oh, got to be the smartest guys in the room.
Yeah, that's the only time that that happens is, A, when you trade out of a pick and all the hype lets the air out of the balloon. And then people start complaining. And that's what you hear with the complaints. Oh, you're the smartest guy in the room. You got to trade down, get more picks. You know,
yeah.
You always end up with that. Or the other one that you run into that with is, one of these guys is going to pop. We know this. In fact, 3 to 5 of these guys that are going to be taken in the first 3 rounds of this draft are going to pop out of nowhere. And everybody's going to have revisionist history because there's two sides to every single draft pick, which is we think this guy is going to be good and we are willing to be wrong that these other guys are not going to be as good as this guy. That's the part of this that's so fascinating for general managers, is the second part of that. We are good with the idea that the guys that we don't pick are not going to be as good, and we are willing to be wrong.
All right, your reaction when we come back. You had a chance to listen to Andrew Berry for an hour there. You know the number. It's simple. It's easy. 216-474-0092. Give us a buzz. You can always hit us on social media at CLE Talking Heads. So your reaction. Also, we're going to get into what Joe Flacco had to say earlier on the morning show. Had some bold statements. I thought he said some great stuff this morning that will definitely make you smarter after you hear what he had to say. It's Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.
I think the fact that him also saying that he doesn't see a ton of – wait a minute. What is the exact words? I don't see a ton of impact on the fifth-year option. So that screams, at least in this moment with him at the podium, I don't want to move up to get a quarterback in the bottom of the draft. Now, again, that's at that moment in the podium, at least, and that's my interpretation. Because a lot of people have said that the fifth-year option always has an impact when it comes to quarterbacks because it gives you another year to, you know, you can redshirt them for a year and then build your way through there. If he doesn't see that impact on a fifth-year option, that screams we don't want to trade up.
Well, I also think that he doesn't – that the pillars of his job, I think, are the best way to put it, that the way he talks about these draft picks isn't about instant – you know, it's not instant pudding. They don't have to be starters right away. And, you know, that question was asked, and he talked about – long-term, and he did it more than once, talked about long-term ramifications of somebody who you're going to draft. And I, part of that might go back to the whole learning curve thing of look at some of the guys he's drafted and they've not gotten the long-term results, the return on investment that the guys they thought they were going to get. They just didn't. And I think that in some way he's had to reshape the way he thinks the draft because he didn't get impact out of some of the players that he's picked before. So now if you go into it and say, okay, we hope that this guy can be, I don't think they can play that game at number two, and they might not be able to play it at 34 either, but they've got to make sure, 33, sorry, they had that.
You're good, bud.
Well, they had that extra pick in there that because of the compensatory stuff in between rounds. That's why I was, at one point I thought, the 104 changed, that's actually, it was 103 at one time. So, but the, you know, the long-term ramifications of a pick seem to be more relevant to him now than maybe if you go back and listen to his first press conference that he did before a draft. That's what I'm saying, that he seems to be very comfortable in his own skin, and I really believe these guys think they have 2 years to get this done. 2 years to get this thing back on track, especially the general manager. Maybe not so much for Kevin, because I think it's easier to pull the trigger on a head coach than it is before you pull the trigger on a general manager. But that, to me, the guy I heard on the podium today is very comfortable in his job and knows that he does have work to do. He's got pressure to become a better general manager or to make sure that the picks that these guys are making have longer legs than what we've seen in the past, that they'll be here longer, that you know he's comfortable in his own skin for at least the next two seasons.
That the Browns can do it with the cap hits that reach. They are not going to act out of desperation. They are going to draft the guys who they believe are the best fit to what they want to do.
Long-term bet.
Long-term
is what he said.
Yeah. Bet. That's what I took away from this. It is a man who did not sound desperate.
Well, and the other part of it too, Joe Flacco, he didn't feel like there isn't this, they're not putting him into any defined role at this point.
Right.
Is he going to be the starter? I don't know. We're going to let him compete. Is Kenny Pickett going to be a starter? I don't know. We're going to let him compete. Is who, if you should draft a quarterback early in this draft, are they going to be a starter or maybe even late? Who knows? They may think that they're going to pick up a quarterback in the third round that they're going to give a chance to compete to be the starting quarterback. I'm just throwing it out there.
Goodness, that kid from Indiana who's, I think, like 23 or 24 from Canada, Rourke.
Yeah.
Curtis Rourke. Like that guy. Like that's
who was
the
playing
kind
of great until he saw Ohio State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which that was going around that last year.
Yeah, especially towards the end of the season, except for one team that seemed to put a little bit of a wrinkle in the situation.
Right, and in the same way, like, you know, who knows if they're going to let the board dictate to them. It sounds like they're going to just kind of let things fall, and if somebody calls and they want to make some calls on a veteran, if they want to find somebody who fits that Jerry Jeudy mold, they're going to try to do it, but they're not going to force anything. I don't see them trading up for Tyler Shuck. I don't see them trading up for Jalen Milroe or anything like that. It sounds like the,
and
first,
no
round
concern,
is the first round.
No concern over Tyler Shuck's age. He didn't seem to be worried about that either. Then again, he didn't do it, but this is a franchise that once drafted Brandon Weeden, who was, I think he was ready for his Golden Buckeye card about 2 weeks after he signed on with the Browns.
He was 28. Like, we're all forgetting the fact that, like, Tyler Shuck is 26 when the season starts. And Weeden, I think, was 28 when he was drafted.
But he had played baseball, that's why.
He had played baseball.
So.
But, yeah, like, it, I don't know. I've become a Tyler Shuck defender, and I think he's fine.
So questions about – and remember when it seemed like things were really hot with Abdul Carter just a few weeks ago, then there were, like, questions about, is he healthy? Is he going to be able to play? Are his feet all right? And Andrew today said, our medical staff is not concerned with any of that, with Abdul Carter's offseason. No concern.
Goodbye me.
I don't know. What else is he going to say?
Yeah, I mean –
oh, I got to tell you, he's got four broken legs and six broken arms, and, you know, I got our medical staff did their due diligence on this thing, and there's no way we're not touching him with a 20-foot pole, you know, and I also think it's weird that he has a third ear. I don't know. You know, you don't see that every day now, do
no.
you?
No, you get under those power lines, you never know what's going to happen. But I think the Abdul Carter part, you're right. If they walked out of this draft with Abdul Carter, I feel fine. Like, I would be fine with it. There would be no complaints.
But I don't think anybody in that room asking questions thinks one question on Abdul Carter. One.
That's fascinating.
Just one. And now, again, this was their first opportunity to talk to him about Joe Flacco, too, since picking him up. There wasn't a lot of talk about Kenny Pickett, though. There was just kind of.
No.
Other than competition.
But that's because.
He wants competition. That's fine.
I think that's because Pickett held a presser, though. I think that's the only thing, is that they had Pickett, so those are done. The nebulous JOK answers, are those starting to concern you at all? Or
he's progressing. That was the final word on that.
Yeah.
Well, what about, you know, you want to talk about progressing? Deshaun Watson also came up at the end. He's doing a great job of rehabbing. We'll figure out when we get there, right?
Yeah. I mean, what is he going to say? I mean, that's the thing with the Watson part. Like, it's a zero-sum game no matter how you spin it. If you walk out onto the podium and go, yeah, he doesn't exist in our minds right now, like, everybody's going to be offended and pick that up. If you come out and go, yeah, you know, he's doing great, everybody's going to get all offended and all that kind of stuff too. There's no right answer when it comes to Deshaun Watson until they cut him. Like, that's going to be the next time you probably hear that guy's name.
Well, the
be
only other way,
the,
I mean,
transaction
if he is healthy towards the end of the season, don't forget, he'll start on the IR, he'll come back on the IR, then they're going to have to take him off the IR
if
they want to at the end.
If your season's gone into the toilet, I think that's the only way that you could see that guy play.
All right, we'll talk more about this press conference. Also, what did Joe Flacco have to say on the morning show? We'll talk about that. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. All right, so I just want to continue just talking about what we heard from Andrew Berry in the last hour, his press conference that he has before each and every draft every year. And so he normally will come out and straight out and tell you that, you know, I'm going to say a lot of words and they're not really going to mean a whole lot. So there were a couple other points. You brought up most of them in the last segment. But when I take a look at this, you know, the question about not taking wild swings in the draft too, I thought that that was important. That if they don't, you know, they're not going to go out there and just, what was that? I'm trying to remember who the tight end, Bill Belichick, was upset that the Browns didn't get, ended up going to the Jets. I want to say Brady. Ended up going to the Jets, and he ended up drafting the kid from Ohio State that never really amounted to much of anything in the first round. It was back when Bill was here, back in the 90s.
Right.
Just because he was upset because the guy he thought they were going to take ended up not taking.
They don't sound desperate. It's the biggest takeaway that I have to the whole thing. They don't sound desperate. And so they're going to operate in their board. It sounds like ownership has given them a decent amount of rope to say, you've got time to fix this. We're going to follow our board. They may not address quarterback in this draft, and I don't think it would should shock anybody if they don't address the starting quarterback position in this draft. Like, that's at least that's what I'm taking away from this, is they're going to follow their board, and they're going to trust themselves, and they're going to do what they do. And I think the rest of us are going to have to hold on, whether we agree or disagree. We're just all going to have to hold on, because these guys have the rope to do it, and they have the trust of ownership, and that's the direction it's going to go.
Yeah. So we sit here. We're a week out. We're going to try to – Craig Paul was the guy. Now, it was driving me nuts. I could not remember Craig Paul. It was the year they took Eric Zeier to the quarterback, and Kyle Brady was the tight end. The Jets ended up taking him in 95, and we were just like, oh, I can't – because it was so mad, and he was upset. It was fun. I don't know, just because we actually got to see inside the draft room, but – man, that was a really, really bad draft for the Browns in 95. Holy moly. Mike Frederick from Virginia.
Dude, nobody wins when you play this game.
This is a bad game.
Nobody wins when you play this game.
They took a kid out of Weber State in the fifth round. Tal Pupa. Man, I don't remember. And P-U-P-A. I'm not making up
that.
A word there.
No,
you don't.
Have,
no. P-U-P-U-A.
Looks like I got to dump that. We're getting into a meeting. I think we're going to call into a meeting.
No, we're not. In the fifth round, they took Mike Miller, and then in the seventh round, they took A.C. Tellison from Miami.
I feel like I need my mouth
what
washed up.
What a horrible draft that was. Seriously, they got production out of three guys. Eric Zeier played 28 games, and that was the most they got out of any of them. Craig Powell only played in 14 games and had like zeros across the board.
Nobody wins when you play this game.
Oh, man.
Nobody wins. On top of that, it was the 95 draft as well, and the team was moving, so you know, had to pick them up and move it with new coach.
Well, they weren't
GM
at that point. They were still here.
All that kind of stuff.
Wait, is that right? 95? What am I looking at? That has to be. But that was the draft. It was the year. Yeah, you're right. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, it the whole turnover.
They were
that,
here
those
for
guys,
that year, though.
Yeah,
they were
those guys were not set up to succeed.
But by the when they had the draft, though, not, like we still didn't know they were gone.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Oh, what a bummer that year was. Okay, forget about it. I don't want to talk about it because Tim Couch should be their next pick, and he had to go back to 99 to get that.
You don't want
to
do that.
All right, let's – Joe Flacco, speaking of quarterbacks in Baltimore and all those things going on, but Flacco obviously becoming a member of the Browns again for the second time around last week. He was on with Ken and Anthony this morning, and as we said, and I thought that Andrew Berry laid it out pretty well, that there are – the expectations for him are not set in stone. No one's telling Joe Flacco when he gets here he's going to be the starter. No one's telling him he's going to be the backup. No one's telling him he's going to be the inactive quarterback every week. They're telling him, go out there and compete, and let's go see if you can win the job right away. That's what we got, right? Isn't that what you felt like Andrew said?
That's what I took from it. So, yeah, it sounds like, hey, go out and earn it,
well,
both of you.
So when he was on this morning with Ken and Anthony, here's what he said about being a mentor.
I don't think people truly understand like what the quarterback room is all about and how that works. I do think it's important for young quarterbacks to be able to learn. You don't want to put a young quarterback in a football game before he's actually ready, because there's just so many things in the cycle in this league these days is just so quick. You want these guys to be ready, and I do think there's huge advantages to being able to sit back and make sure you get and gain that confidence.
I love that. I love that, Andy.
Well, as a Green Bay Packer fan, why would you not love it? That's how they run things in Green Bay.
I think
they wait.
Just...
They know they've got a good quarterback in the waiting. They wait. They make sure they're ready to go before they put him out there, and then they put him out there. Like, this is the problem. This is the reason we've had so many quarterbacks here in Cleveland. It's not just, you know, the current regime's situation. It's everybody's regime since they've been back in 99. It's just we don't have the patience, or we have people that get injured, or you're trying to force a round peg into a square hole. It hasn't worked. It's not going to work. If you want to draft a quarterback and give him the opportunity to grow, you're going to probably have to let him sit for a little bit and be patient.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
No one has patience in the NFL right now.
I think it's smart. It's the way that you should operate. Everybody wants to point to Jaden Daniels and to CJ Stroud, and you want to point to these guys. Heck, even Jeff's guy, Josh Allen. Everybody wants to point at
he
all of these guys.
He talked about that
guys.
Today, about how long they waited. You know, that Buffalo right. waited a little bit before they threw him out there.
And then when they threw him out there, they let him struggle. And they let him figure it out. And they let things get ugly. And they put the training wheels on him. And they did all of these things because they knew that the payoff was going to be there. And so by letting these guys sit, then giving them a really long runway to make mistakes, put bumpers on them, to do all of those different things, you can get a top-tier quarterback. You can work your way to it. The problem is we are in this world where everybody's going, I got to get my Jaden Daniels. Get me my Jaden Daniels. Where's my Jaden Daniels? It's like, those guys don't happen very often. That doesn't happen all of that often. It is rare that that comes out. Patrick Mahomes sat for close to a year. I mean, you see it all around the league. Josh Allen sat for a bit, then had bumpers. Same thing with Lamar Jackson. I mean, goodness, Greg Roman built that offense with the idea of having the training wheels on Lamar Jackson. It took having to get Greg Roman out and Todd Monken in for Lamar to really take off. Like, there's so many things that comes with that, but everybody would rather try to find the easiest path instead of realizing that that's rare. It's so rare.
I don't. It's the way we live right now. I mean, you can get 87,000 different combinations of coffee at Moon Dollars, right? I mean, and if you look at it, it's up to $373 billion if you really want to start playing with the combinations. Let's hear more from Joe Flacco when we come back. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. All right, so when we left, we were listening to a little bit of what Joe Flacco said. If you missed any of that interview, we're going to go through a little bit of it from what happened this morning with Ken Carmen and Anthony Lima. Big interview for those guys this morning to have one of the Browns quarterbacks, and I wish I could say starting quarterbacks or backup quarterback, but that won't be defined until training camp comes through, so we'll figure that out. Chris Easterling also was a part of that press conference today for the Browns. He will join us at high noon. We're going to talk a little bit about the Cavaliers as we get a little bit closer to finding out who the opponent will be for the Cavaliers coming up on Sunday in game one of the first round of the NBA playoffs. Danny Green joins us at 1, and then Darlington Nagby will join us at 1:20 for all those soccer fans. It is kind of cool to see all the signs up around town talking about the Crew playing at Huntington Bank Field on Saturday at 4:30. And really, I remember when the Crew first started, and I spent a lot of time around that when I was working in Columbus and still had the chance to go back. Even when I was working for Fox Sports, I would go back and we'd cover them every once in a while. You know, it was always there's something about going to those games that's kind of fun. It's even if you don't like soccer, that the experience is really, really good.
It's a blast. I would recommend it. It's looking like Messi's going to play. It's looking like Luis Suarez is going to play as well for this one. We'll keep you up to date on all of that stuff. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a lot of fun. That place is going to be packed. It's such a great atmosphere. I mean, it's 45 minutes of straight action. There's singing. There's yelling. There's everything that you want it to be in a sporting event. There's going to be a lot of pregame stuff as well. Keep your eye out for that one. I'm sure the American Outlaws, the Nordic will have something prepared as well.
Explain to the folks that have no idea what you're talking about.
All the supporter groups that follow in the area. The Nordic is the supporter group for the Columbus Crew. American Outlaws, typically U.S. men's national team, U.S. women's national team. But, you know, with this being a special event, I assume they'll have something going as well. Keep an eye out for that stuff because there's a lot of fun things. You can play, like, you know, human foosball and all that kind of stuff where you hold on to an actual, like, rail and just kick and that kind of stuff and move back and forth on it. It's really fun. All that
you've
kind of
done
stuff
this?
Fun. Oh, yeah.
You've played human foosball.
Absolutely. Well, if somebody comes up to you and says you want to play human foosball, are you not going to say yes?
And no one cracks their head open on that.
No, not yet, but you do get kicked in the shins a couple times.
I don't know. I'll have to look it up online because I got to tell you that I didn't wake up this morning going, I wonder what human foosball looks like.
Hey, it was there that was offered. And
I don't even think, is it even worthy of being on the Ocho or no?
Oh, you could put that on the Ocho. By the way, do you, total sidebar.
Yeah, go ahead.
My cable provider now actually has an ESPN Ocho channel.
What do you mean?
Like, the cable provider that I have has an actual station and channel that is nothing but the Ocho. So, like, the other day I was watching rock climbing,
mm-hmm.
and, like, the like Did you watch in the Olympics? I think it's called like the, I don't know if it's called
competitive
the speed climb. That's what it is. Where it's how fast can you get up there and competitive rock climbing.
Oh, is there a bell on top? Do you have to ring the bell?
You got to hit something on the top. It's like a buzzer.
A buzzer?
That you made it up there.
Yeah. But to me, the bell's the old school way to do it.
Right. And the more fun way.
I think it'd be fun. All right, yeah. Speaking of fun, Joe Flacco this morning.
Gets sucked in for hours on end.
To watch competitive rock climbing?
Well, not only that, but whatever other stuff that they put on the Ocho. I was watching, like, it was called roof ball. It was this whole thing. You had to throw a ball around a like a smokestack type of thing, and you got points for it.
Kind of like playing if you catch it on a fly, it's worth 100.
Yeah, kind of like playing jackpot, yeah.
What did you call it?
Jackpot.
We called it, was either 500 or $5.
Oh, I never heard $5. I heard 500.
So 500 is if you catch it on a fly, it's 100. But if you drop it on a fly, you lose 100. All right, so he talked a little bit, too, not only about the age, you know, and when working with Tommy Rees, who's a little bit younger than him, but also talking about picking the Browns now. Because if you remember back when they picked him up last time, it was about him wanting to make sure that he got into a position where he knew he was going to be the starting quarterback. He didn't want to be a backup. He wanted to be able to have the opportunity to show – you know, other teams that had passed him by throughout the years that he could still play, and then he did. And he came back, and he ended up being the comeback player of the year in that situation. Now he's in a different situation where he will be here in the beginning of the year, and he knows that he's rolling the dice on whether he's going to start or not.
All right, let's have a moment of honesty.
Okay.
Okay, let's check emotion at the door. Let's check what we want at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work in logic and honesty, okay?
Okay, Reese is 32,
let's go
by
full
the way.
Spock,
okay.
All right?
Okay.
We're going full Spock. Live long and prosper.
Yes.
Do you think Joe Flacco has anything left in the tank?
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit left, just a little. I don't know if it's enough to carry him throughout a 17-game season, but I do think that he can still play just a little bit. Last year, I think, was a struggle for him, but I also think he was in a weird situation. And, you know, if the Browns decide to draft a quarterback at 2, I don't think the situation is going to be much different.
I think you got lightning in a bottle with him 2 years ago, and I think the real Joe Flacco showed his head last year, and anything you get out of him this year is going to be surprising. I think the guy is done. I think this is nothing more than we want a veteran who is in here. We want somebody who could show you how to prepare. We could show you what to do. I'm not saying that his arm is toast. I'm not saying anything like that. But it's one of those, as we all know, we've all played pickup basketball in life. At some point playing pickup basketball, you try to do something, your brain tells your body to do something, and all of a sudden there's a delay. And I think with Joe Flacco, we're seeing the delay. If he does well for this team, great. That is nothing but bonus. I think the guy is here to be a veteran presence and show Kenny Pickett and quarterback X, this is how you execute in the NFL.
If you're Kenny Pickett and you go out and struggle, how long before you put Joe Flacco in the game? Because the fans are going to be calling for him. You know, this was the same problem they were concerned with last year. How long? The more I listen to Mary Kay, the more I think that it's Kenny Pickett's job and it's going to be Kenny Pickett's job to start the season.
Have a plan. Stick to the plan. Whatever they dictate is the plan, that's how long Kenny Pickett is in there.
Chris Easterling, Akron Beacon Journal, joins us next right here, Baskin and Phelps. Dan Menigan sitting in for Jeff Phelps. Dan Menigan, Andy Baskin here. And, you know, there were some things that he said I found to be interesting, especially the talk for long-term play for some of these draft picks and making sure that they get players that, you know, it's not a rash decision when they go to get them. So we'll figure it out. All right, let's go to the hotline. Chris Easterling is standing by from the Akron Beacon Journal. And here you go.
And you can hear him on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Chris, what's up, buddy? You there? All right, Chris, we're going to toss you back on hold, and we'll have some technical difficulties going on right now. We'll see if we can figure something out. So, yeah, you're right. There wasn't a whole boatload that was working there. That he was going to give, I should say. There wasn't a whole boatload that Andrew Berry was going to give, but I thought he gave more than usual. I mean, I can't walk out of that press conference saying the same thing that we've done in the past, where we were like, oh, this is the press conference where nobody, you know, where I don't say anything and you guys sit back and enjoy. So maybe Chris Easterling got a little bit more, and of course, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram is how you Here's where we're going to hear Chris. You there, buddy?
0 for 2. If we swing one more time, does that mean we're done? We got to step out of the batter's box?
Let me try this one. All right, Chris, let me throw you back on hold. Let me try one other thing here.
Look at this. Does it get any more fun than this? Playing playing roulette as we try to figure this thing out.
All right, Kayla, you answer it this time.
All right, there we go. Now we figured it out. I think we're going to get it here in a second. So Chris was there. Again, you know, the Browns are a week away from the draft. We're all away from a week away from the draft. As it'll be at 8 o'clock next week. Everybody's getting set. A lot of friends going to the Journey concert before. Leading up to the concert, you got buddies going or no?
I do not yet, though I got to check around still. I think because I've got one buddy who throws a massive draft party every year, and so everybody goes over there and brings a whole bunch of food, and they watch the first round of the draft and all that stuff. So I don't know. Maybe they'll have a boombox going with Journey on it in the beginning. You know, maybe they'll
at
do that.
House?
But yeah, oh yeah, at his house. We'll see if that ends up being the case. But yeah, we'll see. Well, you know, I'll be working Browns Radio Network, so
right.
You know, we'll be behind the scenes running around taking care of everything in between there. So we'll see.
Yeah, you'll be able to hear everything on the fan that night too, so you're not going to miss a minute of anything if you're driving around town or if you're trying to just get the latest on what's going on with the NFL draft. You know, you can lock it in at 92.3 The Fan next Thursday night as we do our Browns Radio Network coverage, where you'll be able to hear all the picks right as soon as possible. And then, you know, I don't know that there's another – I don't know if there are very many teams out there that you hear from your first-round pick, like, almost immediately. I'm always shocked at how quick we're able to get them on the air, whether they're coming to play for the team either, because normally, you know, those guys are getting on the phone quick, and they're talking to the teams, they're talking to their new coaches, but we've had the opportunity to be able to get them on the line quicker for you. So, all right, you want to give this one more try?
Eh?
Here we go.
Here we go, Chris. Chris Easterlin, Academic Journal, you got us? Nope.
Oh, 0-4-3.
Baxter, is that you? Bark twice if you're in Milwaukee.
What happens if we try to answer it upstairs? We're going through some remodeling today.
Yeah, so we're doing all sorts of construction and all that kind of stuff. We're down in the conference room once again where Jeff and I were yesterday. So we're going through some stuff. Chris?
Yeah.
There we go.
We got him. Woo-hoo! Thank you, buddy.
Hey, what's up?
Well, that was an adventure. I'm glad we found you.
Thank you for your patience.
No problem. What's going on?
We really think this call waiting thing and call forwarding thing is going to catch on.
Let me
at some
tell
point.
You.
Technology.
All right. What was more exciting, trying to get you on the air or the press conference we heard from Andrew Berry this morning?
That's a it's a neck and neck race. As I tried to figure out which one wins that one. He is one just such a unique talent that we really haven't seen, and it's not just the ability to play wide receiver, the ability to play cornerback, ability to play in both way, you know, both extensively. It's the intelligence, it's the football IQ, it's the conditioning. It's just so many things that have to come together to create that player. I think as a team that seems to love traits, there are just so many of them with this guy that it's hard not to find yourself when you're asked about him to just sort of gush about.
Chris, I thought it was interesting just listening to the line of questioning. I'm not saying that it's reality or not, but the feeling I got, especially for like the first, I don't know, what do you speak for, 20 minutes, maybe half hour? There were a lot of Travis Hunter questions. Do you think the majority of the people in that room think that they're going to draft Travis Hunter with the number 2 pick?
I think a majority of them think that, but I don't know, you know, because it just, again, they may go Abdul Carter. They may surprise everybody because I do think it would be surprised if they took Shador at 2. But I think everybody sort of feels like the tea leaves are sort of trending toward Travis as being the guy just because, you know, the talent he is and really the – in a draft like this, he may be one of the safest picks where we know we're going to get something that can help our football team. Where it is, we'll see. We'll figure it out when we get him here. But this is a guy who can make plays for us, probably make plays for us from almost day one.
Chris Easterlin, Akron Beacon Journal, joining us on the Northumberland Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, Chris, you're scrubbing quarterback from the table at two. You think that's the case for the Cleveland Browns?
I just think, you know, positional, again, the positional value, I understand the quarterback, but I think they don't view Shedeur Sanders quite the same tier as they would Cam Ward. And so they feel like they can they probably also feel comfortable enough with maybe a Jackson Dart, a Tyler Shuck, a Jalen Milroe, that is the gap between Cam and Shedeur is bigger than the gap between Shedeur and those other guys, so that they feel like, you know, they can get later that quarterback who could potentially be the quarterback of the future.
I'm thrilled you brought that up, because I thought it was really fascinating, Chris, how he came out, Andrew Berry is, that is, and said that the fifth-year option doesn't have as much meaning to them. Like, that to me screams, hey, we're not trading up for a quarterback. Like, we are happy with whomever may fall at 33 or even later on in the draft. Is that how you interpreted it?
Well, I think it's also, I mean, let's think about this. If you know you've got your guy, you don't need the fifth year option anyways, because by that point you have negotiated a long-term deal. How many of the guys who get the long-term deals, the big contracts, get to their fifth year option anyway? So if you know you've got your guy, you know by year two, year three, and you get them locked up to whatever the market rate is going. Therefore, the fifth year option is really kind of irrelevant. So that if you actually get a player on a fifth year quarterback on a fifth year option, it's sort of red flags. I would take it as sort of red flags that, well, why is this guy? Why are they still uncertain? Why haven't they locked him down? So that's sort of what I read, and kind of took from the lack of needing the fifth year option on the quarterback.
Chris, the way he was talking about players that they're looking at drafting, he talked with a guy that has confidence beyond this year. Did you get that same kind of read? I mean, obviously we're listening to him. You see the body language while he's talking. So I'm just curious, I mean, especially when he talked about, like, you know, getting guys that can, you know, maximize their importance on the team for an extended period of time. It's not like they're not going to make a knee-jerk reaction on any one of these picks to say, we got to win the second. So I don't know. He talks like a guy with a lot of confidence. It seems like he can feel good in his job for the next maybe 2 years at least.
Well, I think he and Kevin, you couple of what Jimmy Haslam said down in Palm Beach a couple weeks ago, I think they're getting them all again on the Deshaun Watson deal. I think, and they're getting an opportunity to try to dig out of that hole. And I think that barring something catastrophic happening this fall, I think they're going to get 26 as well. That they understand it's not just a one draft, one off-season fix. It's a multiple off-season fix, that 26 is the year where you start looking and really. Guys, also, you know, a lot of that offensive line is going to be a free agents after next year. So it's just, I think that's. They see this as a multi-year plan.
It sounds like ownership has given.
I think they've been given somewhat of insurance,
with new code,
or as much as one as you can get in the NFL, from the Haslam, that they're going to get that.
But that it was the 90s moving.
That's what it seems on our end too, Chris, because they're going to up and move it. Andrew Berry's voice, the way that they've operated this offseason, the way that they've addressed free agency, there's no desperation. Nothing that they have done has seemed to be like a desperation, oh my gosh, we have to win 7 games this year or else we're all unemployed. They've really operated with this idea of, okay, we're going to try to build this, maybe get some developmental guys, go from here and see what the next evolution of the Browns roster is. Like, I don't want to call it a rebuild. I think retool might be the way to put it. At least that's how I'm seeing it, man. Do you see it that way?
I think it is a rebuild. I just don't think they want to use that word, because rebuild comes with connotations of what the reality of it is. I think they're just being realistic, to be perfectly honest. I think, you know, again, they look at the whole situation. They look at where the roster is. They look at where the salary cap is. They look at where the quarterback position specifically is, and they just see this isn't fixable. You know, we can't just write a couple of checks, you know, to a couple of free agents and you know, hit a couple of draft picks and suddenly we're, you know, 2025, it's worse the first. I think they realize that they got to do this the patient way. They got to do this the right way because it is just, there are so many question marks around this roster that to think you could do it with the cap situation is what it is, considering Deshaun, you know, the Deshaun situation. I just, you know, it's reality. I think it sort of reality bit them last year with the season that happened. And I think they looked at it and like, look, we have to step back and, you know, we have to sort of be true to what the situation really is.
It, when you look at that situation, the situation to me says 15.2 points per game last year. I mean, that's just unacceptable in the NFL. That makes you dead last by more than a point. I'm just, and as much as I want to sit here, and I've said it before, that I want them to draft Abdul Carter with the number two pick, I just don't know how they can't pick somebody on offense.
Well, that goes back to the Travis Hunter thing. You can put him in, and he may not be a polished wide receiver yet, but you can put it in there and you can figure it out. If the guys they have, Kevin Stefanski, Tommy Rees, all the Bill Musgrave, all those guys are as smart as they, you know, they've shown that time during their career, they can figure out a way to utilize him to make plays, to score points, especially if you couple him with a couple of more picks where, you know, you get a running back, whoever that might be. You help yourself a tackle, you know, you just get a couple more playmakers and then you're able, you know, suddenly you look like a real offense. You know, you figure the quarterback position out, just professionalize it more than anything else. I wrote this a month ago or so. They just need to get to the quarterback position to a point where it's just stabilized. I mean, it's just, they haven't had a stable quarterback situation in years because of everything Deshaun's happened to Deshaun. Just get somebody in there who can, you know, give them a week-in, week-out professional performance at that position and go from there. Consistent profession, you know, consistency at that position where you don't have to worry about, you know, performances variety of performances, availability, all of that. Just week-in, week-out, this guy is going to go out there and he's going to give us a respectable NFL quarterback's day performance, and just settle that alone will help this offense.
Chris Easterlin, Acker Beacon Journal, joining us on the North Omaha Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. The other thing that stood out to me is what he said about Kenny Pickett, saying that I think there's an untapped physical ability in there still. Do you believe that?
Look, when's the last time anybody thought the Pittsburgh Steelers had an impressive offense? It's been years.
I mean, maybe the Super Bowl run?
I mean, you got to go back to Ben Bell and
Antonio Brown. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brown, Antonio Brown. I mean, since then it's just been, I mean, they win this 1970s style way of just enough offense to score just enough points that the defense can hold the other team to less than that. And, you know, that's not to say I think Kenny Pickett is some sort of long-term answer. But could you see a world with, working in a system, working with Kevin Stefanski, Tommy Rees, Bill Musgrave, where they get enough out of him to, again, like I say, just give you that consistent, solid, it doesn't even have to be above average, just good enough quarterback play that this offense doesn't look like a train wreck. And I think that's in there with Kenny. How much of it, I wouldn't venture. I wouldn't know, but I can understand why, especially when you're so familiar with that division rival that he was playing for, you can think, well, we just get him here and we can get that next thing out of him. because he didn't have this while he was in Pittsburgh, but we can give him this and that. So maybe we can get enough that at least for 2025, you know, we can sort of solve our quarterback issues short term.
Chris, thank you. As always, we're reading you in the Akron Beacon Journal every day. We always appreciate your time, Ohio.com as well. Thank you, Chris.
And thank you for your patience. Hey, yes. And glad we could get your hearing test out of the way early with all the beeps.
That's true.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you later. Chris Easterling really covers the Browns for the Akron Beacon Journal. It was nice enough to join us here in this hour. All right, let's talk a little bit more about what Chris had to say. And then I want to talk about a high-profile situation in college football. And should we be pointing the finger at the player or the NCAA? We'll explain next. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. There's a story. You love this story, don't you? You love this college football story.
I just think it's, once again, where everything sits in college football and how one singular fight that the NCAA did tooth and nail, instead of coming up with a plan, bites them in the rear end again. Like, and we're talking Nico Iamaliava. And the idea, and him telling Tennessee that he is going to go away from there because he wants more money at NIL. He has now, it has been reported that he's heading to UCLA.
But it's not a done deal. It was not a done deal. Morning. Yeah, it's not a done deal.
It's being reported that he may head to UCLA, finding the money that he's looking for. Tennessee, Josh Heupel basically stepped out and said, hey, you go. You're not a part of what we're doing here. He sat out the spring game.
All right, so stop for this point. Oh, not only sat out, I'll tell you in a second here. I'm wondering what you think of this story. And so let me just chime in on that. 216-474-0092. 216-474-0092. We're wondering what you think of this story. Should the finger be pointed at the player or the NCAA? In fact, he was so scratched from the Tennessee program that he wasn't even in the program.
What, they got rid of every single jersey that had his number on it and all that kind of stuff in the pro shop too?
Well, they took away, they took him out of the team shop, and then they went back and showed highlight reels from the season before without him. They took him out of everything.
The problem with this...
At least that's what I read. He may have snuck into a couple shots, who knows. But
this feels like one of those where everybody is going to go to Nico and is going to say, you're the problem. Because you're greedy and you want more money and you want this and you want that. And then another chunk is going to go to Tennessee and go, you're cheap. You should compensate this guy because he makes our team better. And in reality, the anger should be pointed at one place and one place only, and it's the NCAA.
Okay, why do you say that? Why should we be pointing the finger at the NCAA
because
and not the player?
4 years ago when you were in Congress and Congress was doing nothing but essentially grandstanding, asking you questions that didn't go anywhere and dunking on you periodically so that they could get their social media hits. You didn't do what you should have done, which was realize the writing on the wall that name, image, and likeness was going to be legalized and that it was going to happen through Congress no matter how much you fought, and you came up with a plan. Instead, you were blindsided by this, or acted like you were blindsided, even though we all knew this was coming. You were blindsided by it. You put in no rules. You put in no regulations. You didn't put in any contracts. You didn't do anything like that. You basically just decided, oh, no, this is legal now? Oh, we didn't see it coming. Oh, the horror, the humanity, the terror. Oh, and just let it be the wild, wild west instead of sitting down and going, all right, this is how we're going to do this. These guys are going to be compensated for this and this. Let's see if we can work in a salary cap. Let's see if we can work in guaranteed contracts. Let's see if we can work in all of these different things to prevent it from happening. The problem is I can't yell at somebody and be angry at someone for operating in a system of no rules. Just because you don't like morally what they're going about, well, there's no rules. There's nothing to stop this. So yelling at someone for exploiting the system is pointless instead of yelling at someone for the system itself. And that's what ticks me off. And that's why the NCAA is at fault more than anybody else.
All right, I'm just trying to digest everything you just said. I'm wondering, if you were one of the Power 5-4 schools, right, or while this stuff is going on.
4+2.
Yeah. If you were one of them, didn't you kind of want this to go this way? That it would be the Wild Wild West? Because let's be honest, the Wild Wild West has existed for years. The difference is it was behind a closed door. And they were like, yeah, you could get in trouble for this if we get caught.
Well, but they didn't have the portal aspect of it. They had the, you know,
and by the way,
point to the great aunt and dialysis and all of those kind of things.
By the way, the college football playoff makes $1.3 billion every year on a $7.8 billion six-year deal.
Yeah. This is why if you have a problem with this situation, don't yell at the kid. Don't yell at his father. Heck, don't even yell at Tennessee.
How much is he going to end up getting? What's he going to end up making at UCLA? Is he going to get $4 million?
There was talk initially that he may have had to take a pay cut because he was coming into this thing late. Who knows? I have no idea. I'm sure it will come out and they will say how much money he's making. And if it's a pay raise from where he was, good on him. Because that's the rules. That's what you can do. Mm-hmm. There are no punishments for the transfer portal. There are no punishments to do this. There are no regulations for any of this. So, heck yeah, you could just hop into portal and go do what you want. Because you're just playing the game. If you don't like the results of the game, you need to change the game. That's the problem that I have with all of this and people screaming about him. It's not his fault. It's the NCAA's fault for going, this happened. I don't know what to do. Well, let's just do nothing.
I didn't see it coming.
Right. Oh, he didn't see this coming. What do you mean he didn't see this coming? We knew this was coming. We could have told you that from Jump Street. And frankly, I wanted it to happen because I think it's more fun because I think what you're witnessing is the transfer portal and NIL is spreading the talent out to where you want it so then that way you don't have these super teams. You have these guys who are sitting there and going, well, wait, I'm not playing. I'm not getting what I want here. Let me hop in the portal and go somewhere that's going to get me what I want. Hmm. Like, there's so many other aspects to this that's great. And so, if you're Tennessee, you're ticked. If you're a Tennessee fan, you're grumpy about it. You should be. But don't blame him. Blame the NCAA. I mean, it's back to that whole thing, not to go full-blown otter, but like you're not coming at the fraternity system. You're coming at the United States of America. That's really what this is. It's like, put some regulations in. The NCAA needs to get a governing body on these things. They
who,
need to put
the
in-
why? I mean, look, the governing body is the reason they're in this mess in the first place.
Right.
By the way, this is, and we're going to go to break, this is where my argument about how can they constrict the number of years someone can be a college athlete? How can they do that?
Oh, don't do this now.
This is my argument. I'm just like, if you're going to let all this other stuff happen, why are they restricting the number of years? If you are a student at a school, why are you not allowed to participate? Why should it have to be, well, after you graduate, or you can have 5 years to play six years? Just if you go to school there and you pay your dues, or they want to pay you to be there, why shouldn't you be able to stay forever? I don't understand it. We'll argue it later. It's that hypothetical.
But again, it's that whole thing of you need to sit down and you need to put together, unless you love this.
Who?
And I love this.
Who? Bring it up after the break. Who? Who's going to put it together? That's my question. Because the NCAA doesn't look like it's the governing body that it once was at one point. So we ask this question time and time again. Does the play-in tournament work? Does the play-in tournament work? Does the play-in tournament work? Dan, you want to guess how much tickets are going for according to ESPN? Either one of these games or both of them. You want to take a guess?
$35.
$35 to the Miami Atlanta game or the Dallas Memphis game?
I will say the Miami Atlanta game.
So the Miami Atlanta game that we talk about, tickets are going as low as $22.
Ooh!
So let's play the guessing game again. Dallas and Memphis at Memphis, 9:30 tip Eastern. How much do you think if tickets are 22 for Miami Atlanta? How much do you think they are for Dallas Memphis?
I'll say 24.
Wow, $12 for a playoff game.
Sadly, those are two teams, especially the Memphis one. That season fell apart quickly for them. Sadly,
well, Dallas too, right?
Yeah. I mean,
how many Dallas fans are there right now?
That's a very good question in its own right.
I mean, even the Dallas fans aren't Dallas fans. Let's be honest with it. Looking ahead to the Cavaliers, they do have a price for the first game. Tickets as low as $42, according to ESPN, for the 7 o'clock tip-off on Sunday. Again, we wait for the winner of this Miami-Atlanta game. Do you have a preference, my friend?
I have no preference whatsoever, but what I do have to do is be generous. Can I be generous?
Yeah, be generous first.
All right, sounds good. You can win a four-pack of tickets to the Great Lakes Collectors Convention at the Fieldhouse in Independence, April 25th to 27th. Enter the code word HOOP, H-O-O-P, hoop by the end of this hour at 923thefan.com to get registered to win, plus qualify for the VIP grand prize. Get tickets at greenysportscards.com. It's all from the Great Lakes Collectors Convention and Sports Radio 923 The Fan. Again, that code word is hoop, H-O-O-P, hoop. 923thefan.com.
And I'll be out there on, Saturday morning? I think I'll be there. Sunday morning. I'll be out there Sunday morning. We'll have a little bit of fun. So if you want to come on out, we'll talk. We'll have some fun. We'll talk a little bit of sports. We'll talk about the draft, obviously, that coming up after that, too. I'll be there at 11:15 on Sunday out in Independence. They do a great job. I don't know if you, have you ever been out there?
I have not been out there.
So the last time I was there, I think, was 2 years ago. I had to miss last year because I think I was out of town. And I ran into J.W. Haslam out there. Who wasn't out there as somebody who was speaking. He was out there with his kids.
That's a thing.
They were just they were checking it out, and they were just seeing what's going on. If you like collectibles, you're going to love this. So it's a lot of fun, and they do a great job at that event. And I'm looking forward to being out there on Sunday morning at 11:15. Not this Sunday, but next Sunday. Again, let's go back to that other conversation. Miami, Atlanta. Do you have a preference? I have zero preference. I'd rather see – I mean, Atlanta gave them a little bit of trouble early in the season. Miami traditionally gives them problems. Would I think I'd rather have them play Miami? Yeah, probably Miami. But they need to go out and do their thing. I don't. It really doesn't matter. And if they can't get out of the first round, man, is this town going to be disappointed.
I'm not trying to sound arrogant with what I'm about to say. I'm just speaking the truth. I really don't care. I really don't care, Andy.
You don't care who they play?
I don't care who they play. They'll roll through them. Miami is a team that lacks talent. I know they have Eric Spoelstra, but the fact that it's okay, Hero is going to take 30 shots. Bam's one of my favorite players in the NBA. He's just not an offensive player. He's a defense first player. The on the Atlanta side of things, like okay, Trae Young could fill it up fine. As I said to Jeff yesterday, look, you could say Quinn Snyder because he's the previous coach of Donovan Mitchell. You could say George Niang and Caris LeVert because they were here. That's great. Chris Fedor will write a fantastic long-form piece about that and the relationship between all of those guys. Outside of that, I don't care because the Cavs are better than both of those teams. Both series go five. Take care of yourselves and rest up for the next series when things get real fun.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be Atlanta, and I think the Cavs – You think it's five, huh?
I think it's five. Whoever they play. Miami is such a – they lack talent. And they don't even have the talent around the margins that they had when it was, you know, Max Strus and Caleb Martin and all of these different guys that were stepping up out of the G League and looking really good. There's just not that great talent that's there that could take them over the hump and make the Cavs really have to struggle. They just don't have that on that team. And again, I love Bam Adebayo. He's one of the best defensive players on the planet. Offensively speaking, he's not going to drop 25 consistently. That's just not his game. He's a great player to run an offense through. That's just not his game.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Jamie is on line one. Jamie, how are you?
Hey, how you doing? It's JD calling from Cleveland.
Oh, JD, what's up, JD? Sorry.
What's up? So, you know, I'm a Cavs season ticket holder, so you know I'm all into the Cavs. So,
hey, did you get your free round of golf?
No, I can send it to you if you want it.
No, that's all right. I'm just saying, go use it. Stonewater's
good. No, get into that.
No, you back pocket that one, and when you've got somebody who either comes to you and hands you a gift that you don't see coming a last-second birthday, that's when you use it.
You're like, hey, you got to check this out. I got this from the Cavaliers, but I got to tell you, you're so special to me. I wanted to give it to you because
right.
I knew it would be important to you.
That'd be, that's like the plan.
Lay it on thick, my
back pocket that thing. Hey. You'll need it.
But check out, I really think that I really want them to play the – I don't know. I really want to play the Heat because, we used to beat the hell out of the Hawks back in the day and sweep them. So yeah. I think our little challenge would be more to get back at the Heat because you know how many times, you know how that record was that they used to always beat us and now we back whooping on them. But I think the challenge should be more so with the Heat than with the Hawks. Even though the Hawks beat us twice. That's why I kind of don't want to play them. You know what I mean? I think we should just go with another team, but – I'll be there. It's crazy. The game is on my birthday, April 23rd, next Wednesday.
Happy birthday.
Ironically, it's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. But and you already know for my birthday, I want two wins, and I won. I want to get them swept. I mean, don't cheat me. I want it all, you know what I mean? But definitely, what y'all think? Who you like?
We're both up in the air on this thing. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. I kind of want them to play Miami too. But if they get the Hawks, they're gonna have. I mean, they got to win to keep going here. So does it really make a difference? I don't think NBA fans are real excited about this play-in tournament and this game that the winner's going to get to the Cavs, especially when we talk about what you know.
I don't like this tournament stuff any. I just think that, you know, it's kind of you cheating the real teams that did it and make them take a chance at losing a game that they should have been in because they had a proven record. And you know how
didn't that happen to us? It just happened to us a couple years ago.
You play 82 games, and for all of it to come down to one game if you make the playoffs or not, or two games if you make the playoffs or not,
I don't like it.
Have a good birthday, JD. We appreciate you listening to your friend's show.
Happy birthday, y'all. Have a good weekend. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter. But, like, that's my whole thing. You've played 82 games. Why are we having a play-in tournament? I don't understand it for the life of me. Like,
because now you've got 10 cities interested in the playoffs.
I know why. Because it, you know.
Actually, you've got, you know, two more on each side. So.
Money. I'm aware. Cash rules everything around me. I'm aware. I've learned from the Wu-Tang Clan. I know these things. Like, it all comes back to cash. And it all comes back to 30 people making boatloads of money and more TV money and all that kind of stuff. Like, I get that part of it, but it's we played 82 games.
I'm going to tell you, I think the best part of this is the rest the team's been able to get, like, full rest. This isn't, I'm going to throw one guy, give one guy the night off, and then we're going to bring him back in. And this is full rest. And, you know, the team you're going to have to play has already played two games going into this weekend. So, I feel better about, you know, Donovan Mitchell being 100%. I feel better about all these guys being 100%. Going into the weekend, well, I mean, no one's 100% at this point, but at least rested, and the nagging injuries can kind of work their way out of the system a little bit if these guys are able to, you know, just do it. Look, the season was so much fun. Let's just hope that, you know, they can come through and just everything will be all right this weekend. I don't know. And now that the schedule's out too, you know what you can go out and see, and it's more tangible than it was when the regular season ends and you're the number one or number two seed and you have no idea who you're going to play.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I hope everybody's rested up. The rust thing worries me, but the fact that you're playing the 8 seed, like, and neither of these teams are the We Believe Warriors. Like, I've never looked at either of these teams and, you know, because everybody points, well, you know, that's the 8 seed that upset the 1. And it's like, yeah, there was the 8 seed that upset the 1 because they ended up making the moves that were necessary to do it. They ended up... like, they made a bunch of trades in the middle of the season, completely turned their team around, not to mention Don Nelson was a completely different style than what Avery Johnson was playing with the Mavericks at that point. Like, this does not happen very often, and I don't think this Cavs team is one of those teams that you'd point to and say they're on upset alert, and you're worried about them in an upset-type thing. So...
all right, let's get more insight into this Cavs. I wish I could say Cavs Heat matchup or Cavs Hawks matchup, but we don't know yet. So, Danny Green, our Odyssey NBA insider, will clue us in on what's going on next, right here, Baskin and Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. All right, let's go to the hotline right now, and on the line is Odyssey Sports NBA insider Danny Green. If you're a fan of the NBA, make sure to check out his podcast, Inside the Green Room with Danny Green. Listen to Inside the Green Room with Danny Green on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Danny, how are you? We always appreciate you joining the show. You're a good man, my friend. Thank you.
What's happening, Danny?
I'm great. I'm great. Thanks for having me, man. I always appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, it's always good stuff. All right, so let me just ask you, do you like the play-in tournament? Because we're sitting here. I know the Cavs got knocked out early. What was it, 2-3 years ago? I can't even remember that they were in the play-in tournament. I was like, this sucks because they would have made the playoffs normally, but they didn't. And so now we're just sitting around waiting for the Cavs to get the winner of this Miami game tomorrow night, Miami-Atlanta. Your thoughts on the play-in tournament?
I mean, it was just a couple years ago. Everybody was raving about it, how great it was. It was exciting. It still is exciting for the fans, you know, part of it. I just don't think it's as exciting when the teams are so far out from, I guess, contention or in playoff run, like 9 and 10. Some of them should not be rewarded if they're that many games behind.
And should you be at least 500? That's what I kept saying. I'm like, these teams should be at least 500 to get in the play-in tournament.
Yeah, I don't know what the stipulations need to be, but yes, if you're – because now teams always have hope if they're in a 10 seed. And it's like, that shouldn't be the thing. But, I mean, we love seeing this. I like the Golden State-Memphis game was great. You know, see who gets the 7-8 seed, which is cool. 9-10 seeds, I don't know if people are that excited about it. I mean, Mavs played good yesterday. But Yeah, I mean, some teams that don't deserve to be or have the hope to be in the playoffs when they're that far behind.
That's my thing with it, is we've played 82 games, and now we're trying to decide somebody's playoff hopes in one or maybe two games if you happen to drop one and you're one of the higher seeds. Like, why are we playing 82 games to figure this out in two games or one game for a chunk of these? Like, I know it's TV. I know it's so that people can make more money, but it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, everything is a money play, right? So, but I said just a couple of years ago, everybody was excited about it. And now I think it's because some of the teams that are in it, they're not as exciting to watch, or people don't really care to see them in the playoffs. But, you know, there was a time where people wanted to see Sacramento play. You know, they were balling. There was a time where, you know, I mean, Miami, Chicago, they played pretty good basketball for a certain amount of stretch of time. It's just that they said they were so far out of the race for most people. They're like, you know, they don't think they deserve to have that chance. But, I mean, they may change things. We'll see. But end of the day, I think fans like to watch it, and it does generate a lot of revenue, and it'll probably continue until, you know, that thing, until that turns.
Have you ever had a week off leading into a playoff game, Danny? And if so, what do you do to stay fresh?
Yeah, that's we did, actually. Not many times. It wasn't often. But when I was playing, they kind of, toward the end of it, they started extending that rest time. They didn't have the plane when I was playing, really. I think that's fairly new. But, you know, we got a chance to actually practice. We got a chance to rest a couple of days, you know, because the one seed would get like a bye or, you know, a couple of days extra. But we would practice. We would get a day's rest or two. We'd get a couple practices in. And then you'd wait for your I guess, to see who your opponent was, if you were locked in. Because most one and two seeds are kind of locked in early, and they clinch playoff berth. The last seedings, you have to wait till the last regular season game to find that out. So we would just try to prepare for who we thought was the potential challenge, and then, you know, get some practice and rest days in.
Is there a better matchup for the Cavaliers going into Sunday? Is it Miami? Is it Atlanta? And should it really matter when you're the number one seed?
It shouldn't matter, but if I mean, I guess if you're hoping for a matchup that's better fit, it would probably be Atlanta. Because I don't know if they have the same amount of bigs or bigs that can match up with Jared and Evan. You know, Bam is a very good big, protect the rim, and they got, you know, Khalil Ware. So those two guys are pretty solid. But you would want an advantage somewhere, right? I mean, you have advantages regardless, but you probably want more of an advantage at the big spot if you're Cleveland. I would try to go for Atlanta.
Danny, Kenny Atkinson had a great year here, especially for a first year.
Unbelievable,
in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Sure to be coach of the year. At least he is in Cleveland. He wouldn't lose any votes here. How does he become a better coach in the playoffs, or is a better coach just a guy that's been consistent throughout the regular season and carries that into the playoffs?
Just keep doing what he's doing. I mean, I want to say if he's better. I never played for Kenny, so I don't know how he coaches. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can prove people that, you know, it's not just a fluke, because that's everything with any young team, right? It's to prove that we belong and that we're good enough to do it. We're not just a regular season team, so nobody's going to believe in you until you do it. So if they can get to the Eastern Conference Finals, that'll pretty much solidify him as, you know, I mean, he should be coach of the year regardless, but that'll solidify him as a great coach that, you know, is proven for the job and that can get them to win. Because there's only one acceptable loss for you guys, right? And that's to Boston.
Yeah.
So if he can get to that area, then, you know, he'll have proven that he's capable enough. And then he said it's only going to take some time before you guys can beat Boston. You know, obviously things change in the summertime, and hopefully you guys keep seeing group together. But, you know, and if you can even beat Boston, then he'll definitely prove that he's worthy.
Yeah, you don't want the bar for next year. You beat Boston and win the NBA title. You don't want to be like David Blatt, got him to the finals, and then they were in first place and they fired him.
That's kind of crazy. I mean, that's the job, right? There's a lot of them get hired to get fired, and that's why I'm not in coaching.
It's the smartest move you can make, man.
Danny, did you ever walk out of a huddle, though, during a playoff game where, you play for some pretty good coaches, where you walked out of there and you're like, man, he just won us the game. What a great call that was on the play. Like, that moment in a playoff game where you know the coach is a difference.
Yes. many a moments. I was saying San Antonio would pop.
Yeah.
We also had the players, but just the play calls that he made, the adjustments he made defensively, we just knew, you know, if we executed what he was telling us to do, that we had a really good chance of winning. A lot of times we did. You know, there was no doubt in it. So a lot of times with Pop, for sure. And then, of course, other coaching.
What happens in a locker room when a coach gets fired?
That's a good question. I don't know, because I've been lucky to never be a part of that.
Wow. Are you serious? You went your whole career without that? Gosh, you did play for good coaches.
Yeah, so I was with Pop most of my career. Then I had Nick Nurse, who was his first year. So I've been a part of coaches getting their first year with that organization. Doc was his first year in Philly before I got there. Nick Nurse's first year in Toronto when they fired Dwayne Casey. But I had Frank Vogel, who also, I believe, was a new hire before I got there. There were new hires, but I wasn't there when the original coach was there. So I was with Taylor Jenkins for a brief moment, and then I was with JB Bickerstaff before, you know, I wasn't there for but just a short time. But then back in Philly with Nick Nurse, I never was with the group when the coach got fired, luckily.
Gosh, you did play for a bunch of good coaches. Yeah, that'll do it. Yeah. You know, there's
a lot of them got fired after I left. Yeah, a lot of them fired after. So Doc got fired after I left. Frank Vogel got fired after I left. A lot of them got fired after Taylor Jenkins just recently this year. JB Bickerstaff got fired right after I left. A lot of them were new and got fired after I left, so I never was a part of that, like, internal situation. But I could imagine that I can't imagine, because I don't know what that's like, having a leader like a Taylor Jenkins, like a Mike Malone, and the next, you know, the next day they're not there anymore, and we got the interim or assistant coach coaching us now. But I always know that's a trap game for the opposing team. Anytime we went into a situation or a team where a coach got fired, we're like, damn, this is going to be it's going to be a tough one, because the team usually gets hot and goes on a streak and usually plays well. So that's always the game that we didn't like to play so much.
Hey, Danny, I want to ask you an off-the-wall question just because we got a couple minutes. You played quarterback in high school, right?
Was
there ever any point in, I mean, when you know you can go to North Carolina and play basketball, I mean, I think that'd be a no-brainer. But was there any point in your football career that you thought, hey, maybe football might be for me?
Yeah, actually, it was my number one sport, but it was my two main sports. And there was a time where I did like football more than basketball. And I was pretty good at it. I was pretty good at it. My dad, but he kind of pushed me. It's like, you know, it's indoor sport, you know, longer careers, better for the brain. You know, he kind of pushed me that way. But, yeah, I think I could have played college football. And I actually thought about doing both. But, yeah, I could have probably went to school to play football. But I don't know if I went to the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Could have gone Charlie Ward. That would have been fun. That would have been real fun to watch.
Yeah, it could have been interesting, man. But, I think I was athletic enough and I was smart enough to, you know, figure out QB is more of his IQ position, right? You don't have to be as physically fit, as you can see, some of the greatest in the world weren't the most physically fit at the position. It's kind of like in baseball, not everybody has to be super athletic. You just have to be good at your position. So it was really reading defenses, calling out plays, obviously trouble throw. So I could throw. But yes, I said, I don't know if I would have made it to the next level in NFL, but I think I could have played in college.
So I just find it fascinating that, you know, we talk about multi-sport athletes and how important it is for high school kids to not just kind of key in, or even young kids to key in on one sport.
It definitely helped with other things, you know, like even younger, I did track because I was not the fastest. I had to work at a lot of my athleticism had to be worked on. So I had to learn how to jump, high jump and triple jump. I learned to run faster. So I did track and soccer, try to work on my footwork, because most kids, we grow, but it's hard to keep the coordination, right? So
right.
To keep your foot speed right, to get your reflexes. So defensively, all those things came into play with helping me be able to react, you know, read and react and have my footwork down. So, yes, I think it's very important for kids to have multiple sports in their, and not saying they have to be main sports, but they have to be able to, you know, experience multiple sports, be able to help or hone in on the main sport, you know.
Danny, awesome stuff. As always, we love talking to you. Look forward to talking to you once the Cavs start to get into some action here.
Same.
Break down some
games.
Yeah,
we're going to have the Man Weekly to help us break down what the Cavs are doing, how they can win, all that kind of good stuff. So looking forward to it, Danny.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. I appreciate you guys. It's been a lot of fun. So
thank you, Danny. Danny, I know you said Danny said you don't. You're glad you're not a coach, but you sounded like one there at the end talking to the kids. So I'd let you coach my kid. How's that sound?
I appreciate that. Maybe I said I might do Little League, but even then, the parents these days, man, I don't know if I can handle them. It's a lot of pressure these days being a coach. But yeah, looking forward to it. Good luck this week, man. Looking forward to talking to you guys next week. And we're watching these games. You know, I'm excited for the playoffs. This is the time we've been waiting for. You know, a lot of times we just want to simulate to get to the end of the year, and now we're here. So,
Danny, as always, thank you. Appreciate you big time.
Thanks,
we'll
dude.
Talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys, man. Yep.
All right, peace. All right. Well, you know, we also want to remind you that was Odyssey Sports NBA Insider Danny Green. Remember to check out Inside the Green Room with Danny Green on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. A big soccer game coming up this weekend in town. You're like, basket, what are you talking about? I'm like, you need to come back and listen to who our next interview is. Darlington Nagbe, pride of Northeast Ohio, plays for the Crew, joins us next right here. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. Messi will be here, but so will a guy who will be making a return back home to get to see his hometown crowd. We're excited to have him on the hotline right now. Darlington Nagbe is on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Pride of St. Ed's, pride of Akron, pride of Lakewood. Darlington, thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate you.
How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
All right, are you pumped to play here? You got a big crowd coming? You got a lot of friends, family? I mean, Columbus isn't that far away, but this is in your backyard.
Yeah, I got a lot of family coming, a lot of friends coming, so I'm looking forward to it.
So you're coming into a bigger stadium than probably what you're used to playing at lower.com field. What's the biggest difference when you step into a larger stadium and see that, like, second deck, third deck of seats? Does that mess with sight lines or get you any more hyped up and psyched up?
To be honest, I don't really look at that, but I think it's just moments, you know, once the game's paused or after the game when you realize, you know, what just happened, who you played in front of. But I think during the game, you're kind of just locked in and focused on what's going on.
Well, it makes sense, too, because you're used to it with doing national team stuff and going around the world and all of that kind of thing with it. So you immigrated here, grew up in Lakewood. What's the biggest thing you take away from playing at St. Ed's and Northeast Ohio in your game today?
I'll probably say the culture. I think you got a lot of culture in Cleveland. People don't usually associate with Cleveland, but I think the soccer culture, you have guys from everywhere, you know, all different parts of the world and the country that moves to Cleveland. So I think just the culture, use different styles of play.
Darlington, your dad played for pro soccer. How did you end up in Cleveland in the first place?
I think my mom just, you know, she didn't want to continue moving around. So I think she just wanted a steady lifestyle and wanted us to come to the States and go to college and, you know, chase that American dream, if you want to say that. So that's how we ended up in Cleveland. Her brother lived in Cleveland.
Oh, that way, I was going to say, did she take a dartboard and just throw it at a map of the United States? Because, boom, I hit Lakewood. This is where we want to be. No, that's
really
good.
Like winter.
I don't think Cleveland was on her map. We have been to New York a couple of times, you know, so I think it was New York kind of, you know, when you're moving to the States, you just think of New York, you know, California, Florida, like the big states, big cities. But yeah, her brother was living in Cleveland, so that's how we ended up there.
So your uncle was here, so that's how you ended up here. Do you have any great stories, or do you remember like those times playing at St. Ed's and how those how the guys that you played with there? Obviously, they're not at the same level as a national team, but I mean, it's got to be special for those guys to be able to say that they played with you somewhere along the line.
Yeah, definitely. You know, since I came back to Columbus, actually, you know, coming back to Ohio has been special. You know, a lot of guys reached out, former teammates, just former students, even classmates, just friends in general, you know, that were part of my journey at St. Ed's, at Akron, and even when I came back to play against the Crew, having friends come out and check out those games. So it's definitely special to get a chance to play in Cleveland, you know, at the Browns Stadium, growing up a Browns fan. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Darlington Nagbe joining us, midfielder for the Columbus Crew on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, 4:30, Inter-Miami, Columbus Crew, Huntington Bank Field. Tickets available right now, 4:30 on Saturday, that game is. You brought up Akron. You went to school in Akron. What makes Akron such a great soccer school? Like somewhere to, you know, guys can develop that have found their way all over the place and playing in the MLS and a little bit internationally too. What makes Akron so good for that?
I think when I got there, that's when Caleb Porter had just gotten there from Indiana, who's a powerhouse in soccer. So I think he kind of brought his tradition and his knowledge of the game to Akron. And I think it just took off from there. You know, won a national championship, we were number one for a couple of years while I was there. And that's continued since he's left. You know, he really established his style. And Coach Embick, who's there now, has really taken over and done a great job with that as well.
What is that style? What makes a coach better than another coach?
I don't know if I want to say better, but I think the ones that I've seen that are successful are the ones that are looking really, you know, get the group to kind of put their ideas to bring their ideas to life, you know. So I think the thing as a coach, you have a plan, you have a game plan, and you want your team to play a certain way, but not everyone can get the team to believe in it and to get the team to perform that way. So I think the coaches that get the opportunity to have their team perform how they want them to perform and really buy in, those are the great coaches that, you know, are successful, in my opinion.
So, Darlington, you're 34. The crew, I think, started, I'm trying to remember what year, like 90, maybe they were 5 years old when they started, or 4 years old. It was right after the 94 Cup. So you've had the crew for your whole life, essentially. And just your thoughts on being an MLS player and what it means even just to be back in Ohio, let alone playing in Cleveland on Saturday.
No, you've definitely seen the league growing a lot. You know, even Columbus coming back home in 2020, I believe, to come play for the crew. Even just then until now, just the changes that have happened. You know, the Haslins buying over the team with the Edwards family, you know, new training facility, new stadium downtown. So you've seen all these changes, you know. And on top of that, you had a successful team. It's won 2 MLS Cups and a couple other trophies and international trophies. So you're really kind of seeing soccer grow, not just, you know, in MLS in the country, but also here in Columbus.
Darlington Nagbe joining us from the midfielder for the Columbus Crew, taking on Inter Miami at Huntington Bank Field Saturday, 4:30. Tickets are still available to go see that if you want to see Darlington and the rest of the crew go up against Lionel Messi and Inter Miami. So what's the biggest difference this season between you played for Caleb Porter multiple times. Wilfred Nancy comes in. What's the biggest difference between the two of those guys?
Obviously both successful. You know, I think maybe the biggest difference is, you know, style of play, I should say. You know, but like I said, there's more than one way to win. There's more than one way to be successful. Caleb won 2 MLS Cups with 2 different teams, and then Wilfried's been here. You know, he's been successful the 3 years we've been here and won championships as well. But I'd say the biggest difference is style of play. You know, we're a lot more possession-based, keeping the ball a lot more in the way that we attack, you know, since Wilfried's been here.
Hey, what advice would you have for a kid growing up in Northeast Ohio that would try to, you know, just have the goal of making it to your level? I remember in the beginning it was Brad Friedel, who was probably the biggest name that came out of Northeast Ohio to come back. And, you know, he played in the Premier League and then came back and played for the crew. And to have the dreams that you and Brad were able to share. And how do you get there from Northeast Ohio? How hard is that road?
It's like it's changed now since I was younger. I think the route, you know, I took was going to college and taking that route, getting drafted, being a top pick and performing, you know, in college, whereas now you've got other ways. Now you can go to college and take that route, you know, perform and do well there, be a part of a good team and get drafted. Or, you know, we have academy systems, kind of like, you know, baseball kind of have to have their, I don't know what you call it, triple A, double A, single A teams. Mm-hmm. But now we have kind of those teams with the youth where they can try and join teams that way. But in terms of your skills and development, I'll say as many touches as possible, or, you know, repetition, you know, whether it's organized or not organized, you know, finding ways just to be around the game, be around the ball, watching, just learning, getting educated on the game.
You've been in MLS for a good period of time now. What's the biggest difference from when you first got into the league to where the league has evolved to now?
I would definitely say talent, you know, has been a big difference. Exposure, you know, guys that are coming in and out of the league. And I think before, you know, it was, I don't know how big of a destination it was for players, but now you really see young guys, you know, coming into this league and taking their career to the next level. And then you see guys, you know, like Messi, for example, coming to the league and performing and making the MLS known on a global stage.
We found out yesterday we're going to get a women's pro team once the new league comes about. Your thoughts of not only the growth of the game here in the States, but the growth for the women too, I think it's been really exciting.
Yeah, it has been. I got a daughter. She's 11. So just seeing that take off is definitely special for me. You know, she loves soccer. She's a huge soccer fan. She plays. So hopefully I get a chance to bring her to some games. But the women's game in this country, you know, what the women's national team does, and then, you know, the NWSL in their league, and then how much exposure they're getting. It's fun, not just for the women's game, but I think just for the game in general.
Does she got the pink braids going for Trinity Rodman yet? Has she gotten that far?
Nah, she didn't get that far yet. She's,
okay.
She's a Sophia Smith fan, so.
Oh, that's understandable. That's understandable.
Yeah, yeah.
God, she could finish. Triple Espresso was something to behold. I hope those three get back together again and play, because that was so much fun up front watching them.
It was.
Just unstoppable.
Mm-hmm.
Darlington, last question for me. Just thoughts on playing against Messi, this game against Miami coming up on Saturday. Your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, what's it like lining up against legends? Like, that blows me away with this. If I was, like, looking like across and there's Messi or Zlatan or one of those other guys who are just international legends.
No, it's definitely, for me, it's a great experience. obviously being in the league such a long time and seeing players of that caliber, that quality, you know, like you said, legends of the game coming to MLS and performing and taking the game to different heights is definitely, it's definitely cool to see. And then playing against them is always I feel like the first time is always special, you know, but that thing, once you kind of see them a little bit more, you know, you kind of look at the game as you know, you're here to compete, you're here to win, but it'll definitely be a cool experience. But I'm excited for, you know, friends and family and people in Cleveland to check him out also if they haven't before.
All right, well, we're all set. Darlington, you need to give a shout-out to anybody in Cleveland? Or are they all going to be at the game? You'll be able to give them a shout-out in person.
They'll all be at the game. I just want to shout-out Cleveland, Lakewood, Akron, yeah, just Ohio.
Sounds good. Darlington, thanks. We'll be rooting for you on Saturday as well. So thank you for taking the time and joining us.
This is excellent, man. Thank you.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Darlington Nagbe, Columbus Crew, will be here at Huntington Bank Field Saturday at 4:30. They take on Messi. Inter Miami will be the team that they're playing. That's who Messi plays for. So it should be a lot of fun. You're saying, are you going to go down? Well, normally you would go down and tailgate.
I'm going to try to get down and tailgate and do all that good stuff and see the match. It's going to be a really good time.